hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way to life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight inside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me, and that's the name of this program here on Light Resistance Radio.
Hi guys, dot com.
Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, amazing and good information. Got a phone call today from Dr. James Sears, and of course Dr. Sears is involved in a battle, one of Canada's most interesting free speech battles right now. He publishes a scrappy little newspaper, well, actually not little, he believes he has over 1 million readers, 350,000 distributed with each issue, and of course it's online. And it's called Your War News. And I'm sorry, he's the editor. Leroy St. Germain is the publisher. And Dr. Sears, for the last 3 years, has been the editor of Your War News. Now, Your War News is extremely satirical. And, of course, anything that's satirical puts the noses of the humorless most out of joint. And he takes on all sorts of politically incorrect topics. Radical feminism, the radical environmentalists, the lesbian lobby, and of course the Zionists, particularly the Zionists. So needless to say, the organized Jewish lobby doesn't like him very much, nor do the LGBTQ people. And there's been an effort for over 3 years to try to destroy Your War News. First, all sorts of threats were made against the advertisers, and many dropped out. Needless to say, the offices of Your War News have been attacked a number of times. In fact, they no longer have a window on Main Street. They've just completely boarded it over. It had been broken so many times. And even the board has been vandalized, new, you know, spray paint, anti-racist slogans, and the usual type of stuff. So, well, let's be quite clear that the enemies of free speech are not nice people. But they've had a bit of a problem. They've not been able to shut Your War News down. The loss of advertisers didn't stop Your War News. In fact, it's been a signal failure, much to their dislike. Well, okay. Next thing they did was to try to get the Metropolitan Toronto Police to charge Your War News under Canada's notorious hate law. Well, that didn't work. Well, so far that hasn't worked. There have been a number of complaints, and the police have not reached a conclusion yet. So, that didn't work. Well, then about 2 years ago, Your War News started to be distributed by the post office. Well, in certain selected areas. Well, that set the politically correct into a complete tizzy. In fact, the Postal Union announced that it's a union that has quite a Marxist component. They announced that their members did not want to deliver Your War News because, well, you know, it was racist, sexist, homophobic, all the usual terms of abuse. Well, the post office quite rightly told them, it's your job. It's not your job to read what's in the mail. In fact, you probably shouldn't be reading if it's private mail. It's not your job to approve or disapprove. Your job is to deliver it. Okay, well, there's some ill feeling over that. That got some publicity. And then Richard Warman. Now, he doesn't live in the East End of Toronto. That's where the paper is based. But Richard Warman, of course, is an arch enemy of free speech and a chronic meddler. And I really like to know what the guy does. I know he's employed at the Department of National Defense in some sort of an advisory role, I think, about complaints within the department. It's all very vague, but he seems to have just no end of time on his hands. He's filed lawsuits, including against me and the Canadian Association for Free Expression. He filed lawsuits against all sorts of people who criticized him. He's filed all sorts of human rights complaints. Well, he can't do that anymore because the previous government very fortunately took away his toy in 2013. That was Section 13 of the notorious Canadian Human Rights Act, which allowed rule said that repeated communication telephonically, like over the internet, that is likely to expose, whatever likely means, to hatred or contempt a privileged group, that's race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, is a discriminatory behavior. Now, of course, the problem with that, there are many problems, but number one, what is likely? Communication that's likely to expose to hatred or contempt. See, you don't have to prove that any person except the complainant ever even read it. You don't have to prove that anybody actually reacted. And of course, exposed to hatred or contempt. Contempt is really just a negative opinion. If I say smoking damages your health and you're a fool to smoke, am I not exposing you to contempt? Well, of course, that you're not a privileged group if you're a smoker. But anyway, you see what I mean. Anyway, eventually that got taken away from him. So now Warman makes complaints under other in other areas. Well, what he decided to do was to complain to the minister in charge of the post office. That was the minister of public services and procurement. At that time, a woman named Judy Foote. Well, anyway, he complained to Foote, and he was saying that this was racist, sexist, homophobic. He says that's never even been determined by any legal body. That's just his say-so. He thought that the post office should not be delivering it. because it was, basically he doesn't like what's being communicated, and he thinks because he doesn't like it, you should be made to shut up. Well, that's what the totalitarian spirit comes down to. Well, that didn't seem to go anywhere, so early in 2016, he launched a complaint with the Canadian Human Rights Commission against both the Canada Post and the Canadian government for allegedly facilitating the communication of racist, sexist, homophobic ideas, you see, by delivering the paper in the mail. When you think about it, is that ever totalitarian? Well, that too did not seem to go anywhere. In fact, to this day, we're not sure how it was disposed of. Was it withdrawn? Was it just tossed out? It's never gone to a tribunal, we know that. Anyway, on May 26th of 2016, the then minister in charge of the post office, Judy Foote, issued an interim prohibitory order which prevented both the editor, Dr. James Sears, and the publisher, Leroy St. Germain, of sending any mail in Canada, not just your war news, bad as that would be. They're not allowed to use the mails. In fact, Dr. Sears would not be allowed to send his mother or his aunt, a birthday card. I mean, that's the ugly totalitarian nature of the beast. And anyway, that is now being essentially appealed to a special board set up by the minister. Now, so Your War News has been unable to circulate through the mail since May 26th of 2016. That would be enough to put most publications out of business. Don't forget that we are now at September the 7th, a year and a quarter later. This is just mad totalitarianism. One of the great major protagonists in all this, or antagonists, is Warren Kinsella. Now, Warren Kinsella himself is a piece of work. Warren was a functionary and campaign consultant for the federal Liberals in a number of elections, particularly under Jean Chrétien. He even wrote a book where he boasted that he was Jean Chrétien's attack dog. And attack is what he does. He's a nasty piece of work. He dumps great barrels of yuck doo-doo over political enemies, and he loves to call people, even liberals, Liberal Party liberals, racists. You cross Warren and you're a racist. Yeah, the fact he has any credibility is a sign of the credulity of so many sad-ass Canadians. Kinsella he lives in the East End, and he has also been a fairly frequent target of Your War News. And the pompous and the self-righteous just grind their teeth when criticized, but even more so when basically laughed at. So Kinsella has been one of the most outspoken enemies of Your War News. One of the things that, of course, made the minister's decision to have this prohibitory order against Your War News so completely wicked was that she said she had reasonable grounds to believe it was violating two laws. So that's Section 319 of the Criminal Code, Canada's Notorious Hate Law, but also Section 390, which is the defamatory libel section. Well, there are many problems with that. One problem being that what would be reasonable grounds? Well, it would seem to me the only reasonable grounds would be a conviction. Well, no conviction, not even a charge under either of those laws. The minister said in her May 26, 2016 letter that she had reasonable grounds to believe. She had no reasonable grounds to believe. She had no grounds at all, except bending to political arm twisting of the usual suspects, Warren Kinsella, probably, who's well connected in the Liberal Party, Richard Warman, who is well connected in government circles, and probably various arms of the Canadian Jewish lobby. Groups like the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, Friends of the Sodom and Wiesenthal Center, all of these mortal enemies of free speech and free thought in Canada. Anyway, there never been any charge, and now, let me think, 16 months later, there still hasn't been any charge. So people like Warren Kinsella and Bernie Farber, formerly CEO of the Canadian Jewish Congress, now he's with an outfit called Mosaic, that they're constantly up in arms demanding the government do this, demanding that the hate that they reward news be charged with hate, and so on. Some months ago, Warren Kinsella was the first one to actually attempt to lay a criminal charge against Your War News. And that was a charge of threatening, uttering threats. Now, the pathetic thing is, well, he of course ran off to the cops. The police refused to lay charges. They said, there's nothing here, Warren. He went to a Crown attorney. His Crown attorney said the same thing. Sorry, Warren, there's nothing here. This isn't a threat. Finally went to another Crown attorney and was told the same thing. So he finally laid a private charge. Now you might ask, well, okay, what were the words that so incensed him I'll try and get that for you. It might be just a little hard. I may have to summarize it for you. Let me see here. I think I might be able to get it for you, because it's good to be able to read it exactly. Get it for you exactly. Let's see if we can find it here. Summarize it for you. Here we are. These charges were filed on June 21st by Lisa Kinsella. I'm trying to get the exact wording here for you. I cannot find it very easily. Essentially, what he said was that Lisa Kinsella had made a complaint to Child Protective Services about him. Now, he has a young, 2.5-year-old son, and that's, of course, a very, very serious thing to do. And the Child Protective Services looked at the complaint, and upon a visit to Dr. Sears' place, dismissed it and said there was nothing to it. Anyway, some months later, in Your War News, Dr. Sears wrote that he had not published anything about this for fear some enraged follower of his might come around and beat the Kinsella's brains in, or something to that effect. And he was only at this point revealing it. Now, that was the comment. Now, is that a threat? No. It may be a kind of smart way of talking or a smart alecky way of talking, but then that's the spirit of your war news. This was not a direction to anybody to do something. In fact, Dr. Sears had said he'd sat on the information for fear somebody might do something about it. The police looked at this and said there was nothing to it. Two Crown attorneys looked at it and said there was nothing to it. But nonetheless, the charge did go ahead. First court appearance was in early August. And you see, what happens with these court cases? They're a way, really, to wear you down. And they are, in my opinion, an abuse of process. And an abuse by process. The process itself is the punishment. First court appearance in early August. I believe it was August the 2nd, but anyway, we were down there at Old City Hall, and you sit around in a court, and every single case that got called up was remanded. Nothing got settled. This would be a date for a date was set for another court appearance. Well, that, for working people, that's giving up probably half a day, if you're allowed to take half a day off, or a day's work, either take a vacation day or a day without pay. This is a punishment to accomplish what? Well, to accomplish a new date being set. Now, Warren Kinsella did not show up at that court date, and the disclosure. Now, that's the documents upon which the prosecution would rely. They're supposed to be given to the defense. Well, they weren't ready. Okay, so a new date was set, and that was today, Thursday, September 7th. So, Dr. Sears and Leroy St. Germain duly appear in court. They're last on the docket. Heaven knows why. But at that point, this is too good to believe. I mean, you'd almost think I'm making this up. They couldn't find the file. Yeah, they had lost the file. And furthermore, the disclosure wasn't had not yet been prepared. That would seem to be the onus on that would appear to be Warren Kinsella's. Nor was Warren Kinsella present. You see, he didn't have to be, because today would not be the day for the trial either. Today might be a date to set a date, or maybe a date for the trial. Who knows? Anyway, the good news was, and this is kind of a long story, it's taken me 20 minutes to get to the punchline, the charges were tossed out by the judge. So publisher Leroy St. Germain and editor James Sears now have no business requiring them to be in court. And that's good news. The sad thing is that it took two court appearances. And I'll come back to something that Dr. Sears said after he was... I'm going to read to you a bit of a write-up about the story, about the earlier aspects of the story. Both Crowns came to the same conclusion, said Mark Pugash, who's a spokesman for the Metropolitan Toronto Police, which was that there was not enough evidence. There's no evidence of a threat. There was the comment was not a threat. Sears at the time said that there was a mischievous, impotent complaint laid in desperation by these publicity whores. My legal team and I will mop the floor with the Kinsellas on our first available opportunity in court. And he was quite right. Kinsella is a driven man. Is he a publicity whore? Well, probably. But he is driven by incredible animosity to views he doesn't like. If you want to check it out, don't take my word for it. Go on Twitter and put in Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N, and Kinsella, K-I-N-S-E-L-L-A, Warren Kinsella, and follow his tweets. After a case, I'll be interested to see how he reacts to this. And I can... you don't know whether to say good news or not good news, but it was probably good news that he wasn't in court. There wasn't much he could say. On the other hand, it might have been fine entertainment if he had been in court, because he would probably have... you could have been amused to see Warren Kinsella burst the gasket. Oh, yeah, Pablo Rodriguez. Who's that guy? Does he play second base for the Yankees? No. Pablo Rodriguez, does he own some gardening business in L.A.? No. Well, anyway, Pablo Rodriguez is, believe it or not, the whip, the Liberal Party whip in the House of Commons. He's an Argentinian. Anyway, here's the latest immigration story. A Liberal MP is heading to Los Angeles this week for a preemptive strike against misinformation about Canada's immigration system circulating in the Spanish language press in the U.S. that officials worry could inspire a new wave of asylum seekers. Do you know what would stop the asylum seekers? That is, illegals. Dead? Strict enforcement at the border. You come across the border illegally, you're going to get fingerprinted, you're going to have a retinal scan, and you're going to be thrown back. With the understanding you're not allowed in Canada under any circumstances for 10 years, okay? You come back a second time, and you'll do 2 years on Baffin Island in a special prison constructed for illegals. You know, if you want to enforce the border, there are ways to do it. We've got an army, not a very big one, but we have an army. We have police, mostly idle, mostly eating donuts at Tim Hortons or writing speeding tickets. Use them. Anyway, so Pablo is going to try to, well, put a damper on the enthusiasm. Central Americans have long been thought of as the next population primed to make the journey across the Canada-U.S. border. That's illegally, due to major changes on the horizon in U.S. immigration policy. That includes the potential end of temporary protected status for nearly 350,000 Salvadorians and Hondurans, meaning all could face deportation to their home countries. And you don't think a lot of them will come to Canada if they think they stand a 50-50 chance, or maybe even better, of staying under our slack-ass laws? You bet they'll come. So Pablo, well, on the instructions, I'm sure, the trust fund kid, seeing a political disaster that might finally awaken the moribund Canadian consciousness, what wants to kind of put a damper on it. It's not that they want to stop it completely. I mean, they could do that if they were serious. They want to replace the European family settler people as much as possible, but it's like the frog in water. You want to raise the temperature because you eventually want to boil the poor thing, but you don't want to raise it too much too fast for fear that the frog jumps out. Spanish-speaking member of Parliament Pablo Rodriguez has already been tapped as the likely federal point person, you know, point man maybe, for outreach to the Spanish. What do you mean outreach? I'll tell you the best outreach. Get it into the social media, because if you have strict enforcement on the border, they'll get the message. But they know well, what he's going to try to do is say, if you come this way, you're not guaranteed eventual refugee status in Canada, which is true. I would say they've got at least the Haitians have a 50% acceptance rating as refugees, which is bollocks. Haiti is a democratic country. I know it's maybe not the best, but it's a democratic country. In fact, Canada, after the earthquake, helped set up some of their so-called democratic institutions. On August 30th, the Spanish language publication La Prensa reported that the Canadian government was set to welcome Hondurans living in the U.S. with temporary protected status, quoting a community organizer who said he'd been contacted by the Canadian embassy to explore programs, except, at least according to the National Post, that never occurred. The piece mirroring those that had been circulating in the Creole language, that's what's spoken in Haiti, in their traditional and social media earlier this summer, it was cited by many of the Haitians who'd arrived illegally in Canada in recent weeks as the reason they decided to come north from the U.S. You see, under the treaty we have with the United States, each of us considers the other a safe, a third safe country. So if somebody arrives in the United States and they want to make a refugee claim, they must make it there. They can't decide to skedaddle across the border and make a refugee claim in Canada. And similarly, if you land in Canada, you have to make your refugee claim here, not go to the United States. And if we simply enforced that, and protected our border, there'd be no crisis here. So since July, over 7,000 illegals have streamed across the border, mostly into Quebec, and most of them are Haitians. The surge prompted the Liberal government to hastily arrange for a Creole-speaking member of Parliament, yeah, we've got a Haitian in our House of Commons, to go to Miami and do the TV circuit. He's going to be down there in L.A. trying to work on that. Another feel-good piece in today's National Post said that probably not too many of the Dream children will be heading to Canada. There's 800,000 of them. Really? And on what is that based? Well, it's based on hope. In fact, the writer opined that, they'd really be better off seeing what happens in 6 months. They probably will. That the Congress may work something out, and not necessarily for the benefit of the American people, but it might work something out. Yes, there are many mights, maybes, and possibilities, but I can also see one of these dream kids saying, Canada looks fairly good. I speak English after a fashion. I grew up most of my life in the United States, and many of them did. Maybe I even have a skill. I get a chance to have a job up there. And I can see them coming. We might have different arguments about their immigration status. My main argument about them is we don't need any immigrants right now. We've still got over 6% unemployment. We have very high unemployment in certain areas like the Maritimes and Alberta. We don't need any immigrants, qualified or otherwise, right now. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow. The program isn't over. I'm going to take a short musical interlude here. I'm just getting ahead of myself. We have a meeting tonight in Toronto, and I'm excited about that, but always excited to be on the show, too. Here's a typical, almost a signature Merle Haggard song, Okie from Muskogee, with Willie Nelson. So Merle and Willie.
What would you do with 5 3 hours of
was one of his
go get more direction.
Signature songs, Okie from Muskogee.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take no trips on LSD. We don't burn no draft cards down on Main Street. We like living right in the entry. We don't make no party out of loving. We like holding hands, pitching woo, woo. And we don't let our hair go long as shaggy. Like the hippies at San Francisco. Right now.
And the kids there still respect old Jimmy Lee.
That's Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson, and probably one of Merle Haggard's signature tunes, and that was Okey from Muskogee, very much the reaction to some of the radicalism of the 1960s. Merle Haggard was always the voice of the common man, the average patriotic working American. Here's Kris Kristofferson, another kind of late 60s, early 70s song, and this is Sunday Morning Coming Down. A lot of people have done that.
With a smart light, that showed the moment. I really thank you very much for the reception here. My hobby is photography, and tonight I'm going to show you some of the pictures I've taken. This first one was taken in Jamaica during a recent vacation. It's a kind of a different look at one of the biggest motion picture and music stars in the world. He is also my guest tonight, Kris Kristofferson.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
I didn't know you took such good pictures.
Oh, well, sometimes. You know, Kris and his wife, Rita Coolidge, were two of the people we came to California just to be with, but when we got here, Kris was in Natchez, Mississippi, making a movie. And Kris, I really want to thank you for flying in just to do this show. I really appreciate it very much.
I'm honored. I get to play with Tennessee 3+4.
Hey, let's do a song. Here's a song that Kris wrote, 10 years ago? And I sang it, and I loved it, and I've been singing it so long, I've kind of claimed it all for my own, but I would really be honored if you'd sing it with me.
Well, up to now, that was the proudest moment of my life. This might be the proudest.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled in my closet, threw my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt. Then I washed my face and combed my hair, and stumbled down the stairs to meet the day.
That before I own cigarettes and songs that I've been picking. But I lit my first and watched a small kid cussing at a can that he wants kicking. Then I crossed the empty street and caught the sunny smell of someone frying chicken. It took me back to something that I lost somehow, somewhere along the way.
On a Sunday morning sidewalk, wishing Lord that I was stoned. Cause there's something about a Sunday that makes the body feel alone. Short of time, half as lonesome as the sound.
Sunday morning coming down.
And that's Kris Kristofferson that's on the Johnny Cash Show. Johnny did that song too. I'm going to finish our short musical interlude another Kris Kristofferson song, very characteristic of the late 60s, Me and Bobby McGee.
Busted flat by the rules, heading for the drink, feeling nearly faded as my dream. Bobby calmed the diesel down just before it rained, took us all the way to New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana, blue and sad while Bobby sang the blues. With them windshield wipers slapping time and Bobby clapping hands, he finally sang up every song that driving knew. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing ain't worth nothing, but it's free. Feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and Bobby McGee. Standing right beside me, Lord, everything I know. Every night she kept me on the cold. And so when near Selena's, Lord, I let her slip away. Looking for the home I want you to find. I prayed all my tomorrow for a single yesterday. Thank you.
that's Kris Kristofferson and the gang with great 60s classic.
Before we do it, I'd like you
and that's me and Bobby McGee. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I was talking about the Dreamers just before the break, and here's a preachy little column by Conrad Jakubowski with the Globe and Mail. Anyway, along the way, he says, red state, that's Republican state, Republicans have held DACA, and that's the deferred action for childhood arrivals, that's people who arrived here as children illegally, have had DACA in their crosshairs ever since. Because Obama could not get any changes through Congress, and so simply by executive order, sort of legalized, or gave these people temporary permits to remain, or halted enforcement against them. They take a zero-tolerance stand on illegal immigration, arguing the granting a form of amnesty to one group of undocumented illegals. No, they're not undocumented immigrants. They didn't lose their documents in a card game. They didn't have any. It only encourages more illegal immigration, and that's exactly what happened under Reagan. Reagan gave an amnesty, and it has come back to haunt the United States ever since, because an amnesty simply tells other people, look, get up there, hang in long enough, and eventually there'll be another amnesty. They'll let you stay. It's dangerous, vile information. Of course, many of them are just pandering to white voters who feel threatened by the country's changing demographic, says Conrad Jakubowski. Once again, many of them, that's the politicians, or Republican politicians, are pandering to white voters who feel threatened by the country's changing demography. Well, they have every right to feel threatened. With present immigration levels, 85% from the third world, whites will be a minority by 2041. I don't think it's an unreasonable concern. And, of course, Americans have never had a discussion about this. It was just snuck in, as happened in Canada. There's nothing unreasonable. There's nothing raw or unreasonable about such a fear. And there's nothing unreasonable about the question, well, do we really want to be a third world country? And I can give you any number of reasons why we shouldn't. Number one, it was whites. It was Europeans who founded the United States. They were the founding settler people of the United States of America. The United States government, a Republican form of government, going back to science to some degree, to the political systems of ancient Greece and Rome, and owing a lot as well to the British parliamentary system, an interesting blend of many European systems. Anyway, Pastor Tom Robb has pointed this out on numerous occasions, but it's a very important point. All the original 13 colonies restricted citizenship to white people. It was not a multicultural country. It was not a multiracial country. Citizenship was white for whites. And it was quite clearly defined that way. That's what America was. So the odd person might come in from Latin America or from Africa, and if they were not white, they would not have the right to be a citizen of Massachusetts or New York or whatever. that was what America was. Now, why should America not be a third world country? Well, not to be unkind about it, but, and this is a big concern with my good friend Dr. James Sanchez in Seattle, Washington. Most third worlders have a lower IQ. Now again, it depends where they come from. But those coming up from Central, and the bulk of those coming to the United States are from Mexico and Central America. Add in Haitians, add in a goodly dollop of people from the Middle East, and the average IQ is considerably lower than the average American IQ. if the average white IQ in the United States is 100, roughly, the average IQ across a swath of North Africa, going into the Middle East, is about 90 or a little lower. In Central America, 90 or lower. Now that's average. There's the odd genius, of course, but you know, if the average is 90, that means many people are lower than that. Now, who comes by way of immigration? Well, quite often, the people who aren't doing too well in their own country. And why aren't they doing too well in their own country? Not always, but quite often, because, well, not to be too unkind about it, they're not very bright. Now, Sanchez has noticed a marked decline in the average IQ in the United States. Now, that can only occur with mass immigration. Small numbers of immigrants are probably not going to affect the IQ much one way or the other, especially in a nation of about 320 million people. But we're not talking about small immigration. We're talking about large-scale immigration. So the question he has asked is a question I ask, and I think thoughtful people ought to ask as well. Will you long be able to retain a first-world country with a third-world population? I think the answer is no. Can you retain a first-world country with a declining IQ when you are up against when you're up against competitors like, for instance, communist China, where the Orientals have an IQ, and this is debatable. And I've had many arguments with the late Professor Phil Rushton about how comprehensive the surveys were that came up with this, but he and other psychologists claim it's true. The average Oriental IQ is slightly higher than the average white. So let's give China an IQ at least that of white North Americans, an average of about 100, or maybe even a trifle more. Will America be able to, or in Canada as well, be able to retain its first world status with a third world population with a lower than white IQ? I think the answer is probably not. Another thing, and this was a conclusion of Rushton and those who studied IQ and genetics, and that is that it is very hard to maintain a democracy or representative government with a population with an IQ of 90, which is one of the reasons George Bush's grand idea of regime change and exporting to democracy to the Middle East, even if you take it at face value rather than just an excuse for more wars for Israel. But even if you take that as an idealistic goal, it's utterly unrealistic. A population with an IQ of 90 simply doesn't have the mental wherewithal and the moral wherewithal to make representative government work. In fact, this is allegedly a true story. When Benjamin Franklin came out of Independence Hall during the discussions about the Constitution, some leather-lunged lady yelled at him, "Well, what have you brought us?" I think it was Dr. Franklin, but anyway, what have you brought us, Mr. Franklin? And he said, "Madam, a republic, if you can keep it." And what that meant was, a republican form of government will only work with citizen participation. Participation means a fair degree of literacy, a fair degree of the ability to read and discuss and debate issues, to take an interest, to take a stand, and to participate. Without that, the republican form of government will not work and will slide into dictatorship, or oligarchy, or something like what we're more and more facing today. Representative government, if that's what you want to call it, or republican form of government, which is just a slightly way, different way of saying the same thing, will only work with a high degree of participation, and that's only possible with a literate population, and a quite an intelligent population. And certainly the conclusion of a number of the major writers today is that you won't be able to have a democracy with a real democracy or participatory government with a population with an IQ of 90. Well, what will that mean if the United States, through massive third world immigration, lowers its IQ? Well, probably the Republican form of government will have to go. These are just among the many very valid reasons to question the population change that we're now undergoing. And supposedly, if you have any problem with it, well, you're just a miserable old white fogey. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the funny side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. Shows repeated 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon, all of those recent standard time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.